A reading from St. John, the 13th chapter. When Jesus had washed his disciples' feet and put on his outer garments and resumed his place, he said to them, "Do you understand what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example, that you also should do just as I have done to you." Here ends our first reading. And our second reading from Matthew chapter 19. Then children were brought to Jesus that he might lay his hands on them and pray. The disciples rebuked the people. But Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for to such belongs the kingdom of heaven." And he laid his hands on them and went away. Here ends our second reading.
Start my brief meditation with two verses from Proverbs. It's a short passage that I memorized decades ago. I can't even remember. But I just happened to pick this Good News version up for the first time at reading the verses I memorized, and the second line was so different and so appropriate for my talk tonight that I decided to read it out of this one. Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Never rely on what you think you know. Remember the Lord in everything you do, and he will show you the right way. I don't think there's anybody that I don't know here, so I won't tell you that my name is Julie Stephenson and I'm married to Pastor Dave. I will tell you that I'm terrified right now. So I purposely asked Dave to put me first on the list because I knew there would be some very amazing and moving faith stories, and I wanted not to be a letdown. So anyway, I have been a lifelong Lutheran and Christian as far back as I can remember. My parents both grew up in homes that were Lutheran, and they worshiped regularly in Lutheran churches. My parents followed in their parents' steps and regularly brought me and my three siblings to church. I was baptized in a Lutheran church when I was a few months old. My earliest memories of church are things like Sunday school, vacation Bible school, mother-daughter banquets, and sitting in the same pew every Sunday right behind a woman who had a fox wrap that she wore that had the head and the eyeballs, and my brothers and I daring each other to touch it until my dad gave us the look. I attended confirmation for 3 years, 7th, 8th, and 9th grade. I had my first communion on Confirmation Sunday, which was Reformation Sunday. It must have been the first time I had wine because I didn't know what it tastes like, and I very much felt like confirmation was, or getting communion was like a reward or a graduation from confirmation. In my small town that I grew up in, Grand Rapids, Minnesota, it was a very easy and a very good time to live the Christian life. I say that because it seemed to me that everybody I knew or lived on our block went to church, and all of my friends went to church. And now when I look back at it, I so miss the things that I didn't know I would be taking for granted. Things like on Good Friday, where all the downtown businesses closed from 12 to 3 so everybody could go to church, or the massive lighted manger scene that was on the front yard of the courthouse, or the tradition that my high school choir had where every year at our spring concert, our last song, we would invite all the choir alumni in the audience to come on the stage with us, and we would sing our traditional closing number, "The Lord Bless You and Keep You." So of course, with an upbringing like that, I was going to go to a Lutheran college, and I went to Concordia College in Moorhead. My relatives, a lot who never went to college, came to my small graduation party and joked multiple times that I was really going to college to get an MRS degree. And, you know, I would get very indignant and tell them, no, I'm going there and I'm going to major in social work and psychology. But then deep down, in my mind, I would say to myself, well, duh, I do hope to be married someday. I do hope to have a family. What a better place to meet someone than at a Lutheran college. I'd say that was true back then. I met Dave during our middle years at college, and we graduated in May. We were married in October, and he started seminary at Luther that fall. We interned at a very small logging town in western Montana, just about as far as you could go before you fall into Idaho. That's where our first child, Josh, was born. After seminary, Dave's first call was into a small farming town in southwest Minnesota, Lake Lillian, Minnesota. So at that point in time, if someone had asked me how I would describe my Lutheran faith journey or my Lutheran faith story, I would have said, all in. That would have described it. If I had to pick a title for tonight, it would have been all in. My faith was a very important part of my life. I felt very blessed with my circumstances, and I could envision being a pastor's wife and my life revolving around the church. But I also want to share with you tonight two experiences in my faith story that were unexpected and where I wasn't all in. And I have to digress for one second and tell you that I would say for the first 50 years of my life, I had a personality flaw, I call it. Dave says it's because I'm a firstborn, but I know firstborn people that don't have that. But he says it's because I'm a firstborn. I always thought I was right. Everything. I mean, I very patiently listened to other people, and I was never rude or anything, but if there were any crazy ideas, and me being a firstborn and thinking that, it was my way or the highway. So, but I want to share these two experiences tonight, and with that in mind, because they shaped and changed my faith story and shockingly proved that I was not always right. The first experience happened in our church in Lake Lillian when Josh and Jenna, our second child, were toddlers. Dave was he was the chairman of a synod task force on sacramental practices, and they were going to look at things like discussing what age children would be allowed to have Holy Communion. And when Dave first told me that they were considering letting small children receive communion, my immediate reaction was, and I was going to take off my glasses so you could see the eye roll, and then I probably thought, well, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard of. And since I'm always right, that was not going to be happening in our family. And my reasoning wasn't a bad reasoning. It was that kids are too little to understand communion, and they usually goof around when they go up anyway. And in our church at the time, we had kneeling altar communion. So you go up, you kneel at the altar, they go pass you by. And I didn't usually pay too much attention to our son Josh because I was at the altar by myself also with a one-year-old. So after Dave told me about the task force and what they were looking for, I decided I was going to watch Josh the next time we went up for communion so I could reaffirm what a silly idea this was. And instead, as I watched him, I was amazed at how he knew every move at the altar rail. He kneeled when we got up there. He folded his hands while he waited. He held out his hand for the wafer or the bread and the communion cup, even though he got passed over both times. And I asked him later, why did you hold out your hand when we were up there? And he said, I wanted to have Jesus' supper like you. And my heart hurt when I heard him say that because I realized that even as an adult, I can't explain the mystery of Holy Communion. All I know is Jesus did it, he told us to do it, and when we do it, we receive Christ. And every time I saw my children as they were growing up, and now my grandchildren, when they receive Holy Communion, I literally can see and feel their faith growing. And I'm not saying that's the right thing and everybody should do it that way, but that was my experience with it. So maybe the next time you see my youngest granddaughter streak back to her seat or skip back to her seat after Holy Communion, you'll also get a chance to see her when she comes up and holds her hands out so reverently to get the wafer and is so careful when she dips it into the wine so that she can have Jesus too. The second experience that changed my faith story also was at our church in Lake Lillian, and this one took me a little longer to be all in on. I can't even remember when Dave brought up the idea of doing a foot washing service on Maundy Thursday. I know we were in the year of the cycle of scripture passages where in John 13, Jesus washed the disciples' feet. I'm sure that's where it started out. But I'm pretty sure that idea got two eyeball rolls. To me, it was bad enough to be the person to take off your shoes and socks at the altar, but it was almost too much to think of someone washing your smelly feet. But my obvious negativity didn't faze Dave, and he went ahead with the service. When we moved to Little Falls, Minnesota, the foot washing service followed us, and he introduced it to our church there. I sometimes participated with Dave, handing clean towels to him, but my involvement was probably reluctant and limited. When we moved to Washington State, Dave introduced the foot washing service to our congregation there. And one year I got a promotion, and I agreed to also be a foot washer, since no one else was ready to do it. At one of the foot washing services, a man in his 60s came up to have his feet washed by me. He was a good friend of mine in the church, but it was still a little awkward for me. And I can't explain what happened, but during the process of washing his feet, something holy happened. I was seized by a feeling that I can't describe it, somewhere between awe and peace as I was washing this man's feet. And I clearly remember thinking, after he got up, what just happened here? After church was over, I was still thinking about it, and I was wondering if I had just imagined this or if my mind was playing tricks on me. And then the gentleman whose feet I had washed, who was my friend, came out, and we were chit-chatting and trying to make small talk, and he kind of hemmed and hawed, and then he looked at me kind of sheepishly, and he said, "Something happened in there, didn't it?" And I said, "Yep. It did. I don't know what it was, but I can't explain it, but all I can say is that it deepened our friendship and it deepened both our faiths. And I learned again that sometimes God can touch our hearts in ways that we least expect it. And that's why that second line in the Good News version of the Proverbs about not believing what you think is right, or something like that. What I hope you take away from hearing my faith story is two things. The first one is the passage from Proverbs. Never rely on what you think you know. You should always be open to God's hand and God's touching you in somewhere along your faith journey. And secondly, your faith journey does not end until the day you die. I have wonderful parents and loving parents who raised all of me and my three siblings in a wonderful, loving Christian home. I have two brothers and a sister that are wonderful, loving people, but after we all left the house, there's only one of us four kids that still has a church membership and an active faith. So my faith story absolutely cannot be done. Amen.